You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.
Hi, I'm Alice Kahn. I head up acquisitions and development for Cartoon Network in the U.S.'s daytime schedule. Cartoon Network is an international channel. We have channels in all over the globe. I focus on our U.S. daytime schedule. Cartoon Network is a part of Turner Broadcasting, and that is a part of the greater Time Warner company.
Great. Well, thank you very much for being here today. We're going to focus mainly on the tween market, because I know that's your demographic. Could you define for us, apart from age, what defines them and how have they changed in the last decade in terms of media consumption and creation, maybe?
Yeah, and it's interesting, that word tween. People have taken that to mean a lot of different age groups. I'm not sure I would use tween for Cartoon Network specifically in terms of our daytime audience.
Okay.
When you think of who's home between 9 in the morning and about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's children who are not in school full time, so that they're between the ages, they're as young as infants, as old as maybe 7 or 8 years old. Our focus is on that post-preschool market, kids who, because they've been watching television since they're 12 or 18 months old, by the time they're 3 and a half, certainly by the time they're 4, have grown out of those preschool programs and are looking for what's next on across screens. In many cases, that their choices would be programs that are designed for 6 to 11 or 9 to 14-year-old kids, which, let's face it, little kids are as aspirational as the rest of us and would like to watch them. But in those daytime hours and for young children, mom or dad, but it's mostly moms at home with kids during the day in the U.S., mom still controls the remote. So as we looked at how to craft a successful daytime that would be additive in a very crowded U.S. television environment, we chose to focus our programming on those children who've grown out of preschool programming but are not quite ready for the 6 to 11 and 9 to 14 worlds. You can call them the pre-cool generation, but they're between the ages of 4 or 4 and a half and 7 or 8 years old.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, and how have they changed as an audience, do you think, in the last decade, or have they?
Well, I think they've changed tremendously. And while I'm reluctant to use the marketing term of kagoi, or kids are getting older, younger, unfortunately, I do think that in some ways it's true. And again, it's because of kids' facility with technology, and that's due to their early introduction to the screen. There is, in the U.S. and certainly in other parts of the world, a fairly vibrant infant video market, so that children and their parents now have grown up with screens, whether it's a television screen or a mobile phone screen or a handheld gaming device screen, as part of their lives from a very early age. I think another reason that children's media use and media consumption has changed is that we have a generation of parents now who grew up with the personal computer, who grew up with television, who grew up very comfortable with not only technology use, but also the sort of ubiquity of technology as part of their everyday lives. So today's children don't consider television or computers or Game Boys or perhaps the Wii might be the one exception to that. As anything special, it's furniture that's in your house. You don't brag about having chairs and tables. You kind of have chairs and tables, at least in Western society. And so you've got kids who say, yeah, it's not really very special that we have a television or a computer at home. It's just kind of what's in your house.
And that's fascinating to understand, the younger parents today, they are grown up with ubiquitous technology, and like you say, and how have you kind of captured that in kind of your output then? That do you kind of market to the parents as well as much as the kids themselves?
It's a really good question, and that's essentially what I think that's what why the preschool market in the U.S. and globally has been as successful as it has been, and I think it's part of what drives us is as we look at those pre-cool kids who've grown out of preschool, we work with parents, and let's face it, most of us in the kids' business are parents or are about to become parents. Mm. So how do we appeal both to what we know is developmentally appropriate for our children and will be fully engaging, and appeal to parents? I think the preschool market has done a terrific job of that, and globally, you can't make a bad choice when you look at preschool programming. In order to do well financially in preschool, you have to do good for kids. It's what parents expect. It's what kids expect. It's what the commercial marketplace expects. Mm. As our children get older, that connection between doing well and doing good is a little more tenuous, frankly, because kids have a little bit more control over the content that they watch and play with. Mm. But I think in anything you do for young children, you strive to be appealing and engaging and for parents as much as you do for kids. In many cases, and very specifically for Cartoon Network, that boils down to the fact that we have characters on our air that for children, they're new, but for parents, I have parents who are looking at it and going, great, Scooby-Doo! I haven't seen that in a really long time. Hey, Tom and Jerry, these are, you know, those are parents' old friends on screen, and they're very happy to introduce their old friends to their children. Mm. So a lot of it is looking at those brands that, frankly, have held up very well over the years, and you know, we're delighted to be able to introduce a new generation to old friends.
Brilliant. And let's get into kind of the debate around the public debate very much and the policy debate now, especially in the UK, around banning advertising around certain viewing times. And this is all related to the junk food debate. I know the US have been following what's been happening in the UK very closely, the whole Ofcom debate and the regulations that are coming out there, or the recommendations now until they become regulations. How has that affected you as an organisation? And what do you think about the whole debate in that regards?
Well, I think there's two issues. I think there's the issue around advertising at all around children's programming, and then I think there's the issue about how children's media provides content that helps children lead healthier, happier, more productive lives, and still provides a viable entertainment source. Around the advertising, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here. It would be terrific if television production and creation were supported by whether it's the government or grants programs or non-governmental organizations like foundations, mm-hmm. to the point where we weren't as reliant on commercial businesses to support the creation of children's media. But that, frankly, is not the case. Even in countries like Canada and France, where there is more government support than in other nations, we are in a business of providing entertainment and information, and those businesses are supported by other commercial businesses wishing to get their messages out. I think the U.S., the U.K., and other nations globally have been remarkably responsible in listening to parents' needs about messages that are healthy for their kids, so that as we get into this debate of, you know, in the U.K. it's, you know, HFSS. In the U.S. we're just beginning those debates. In fact, there's a meeting in February with our Federal Communications Commission about how we continue to provide a robust and diverse children's media market and children's media content, and still keep families and children's healthy needs in mind. I think there's a balance to be struck between the needs of parents and kids, and both for healthy messages and for a robust media environment, and without regulation. And that's certainly what we're working towards here in the U.S., and we're pleased that the meeting is being held in February.
Brilliant. Well, we'll just wrap it up with one final question, and it's all relating to the future. How do you see the future in terms of production, distribution platforms, online conversions for Cartoon Network and what you guys do there for you?
You know what, if anyone stands up and says, I know what the future of children's media is, I would run quickly away because they're lying. But what I do think we can do is predict based on what we know of sort of the history of media in the 20th century. And that is that nothing stays the same, everything changes. And as we go forward, it's apparent to me, and by virtue of the fact that we're doing this podcast, it's apparent to me that distribution is rapidly changing and that it is young people who are on the forefront of creating not only new distribution but new content for that distribution. So there's a terrific article on CNET today about the fact that we've got 7 and 8 year olds who come home and say, "Hey, let's check out and see what's on YouTube." This is a generation who expects that their media will be there for them when they want it, and they can have it on demand, and whatever it is they want, it will be there. And whether that's delivered by video on demand, delivered by broadband channels, or it's created by them and their friends on their cell phone, and then they uplink it to YouTube, the divisions that used to exist between media creation as an industry and the consumer, I think, are rapidly dissolving. Mm. And if I predict anything for the future, it will be that we are finally at the place we thought we were at 10 years ago in the internet boom, where user-generated content will not only become something that's easy for kids to do, but will become something that other kids actually want to watch. And that's always been the rub. Look, you've always been able to make your own home movies and put them up someplace, but the technology was so clunky that, you know, it's like, who wants to watch somebody else's home movies? You want to see pictures of yourself, not somebody else. But finally, we've got low enough cost, easily accessible technology and distribution that allows kids to make stuff other kids are actually interested in. And I think that's what's fascinating, and that's what I think we have to look forward to.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to thank you for your time, Alice. It's really been a pleasure talking to you, and thanks for joining us on Media Snackers.
Thanks a bunch. It's been great.
You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.